This is Radio Sai Global Harmony Asia Stream, and this being a beautiful Thursday, you are listening to all our programs live from our studios in Prashanthi Nilayam. Dear listeners, the time now is 12:54, and we are very well aware that we've started way later than we usually do. As always, this is Prem from Team Radio Sai, and with me is Arvind. We are here for the afternoon satsang. We apologize for the delayed start. We had some things to sort out, and we are happy that we are able to talk to you now. And we welcome all our listeners to today's afternoon satsang. And also I welcome Brother Arvind.
Thank you, Prem. Sairam, dear listeners, and welcome to one and all to participate in this satsang, which at the outset we offer at the lotus feet of our beloved Mother Sai. Prem, last week we were discussing about the Beatitudes of Christ.
Yes, indeed, Arvind. And the Christmas season is still hanging around, I should say. And it wouldn't be out of place to continue our discussion on the Beatitudes.
Perfectly, Prem. It has been such a beautiful and fulfilling Christmas at Prashanthi. Dear listeners, I sure do hope that all of you either heard the Christmas celebrations or watched it live via the streaming on Radio Sai. It has been a beautiful Christmas with people from more than 25 countries coming together to bring in the love, the generosity, the affection, the grace, the glory and grandeur of Christmas into Prashanthi. Prashanthi is lit up everywhere. It's bright, it's shining, and there's happiness and joy in the air.
And it was so wonderful. I don't know, I've been a part of so many Christmases before, but somehow sitting there in Mandir, I really felt, even the overseas choir and the students' choir, something special about it this year. I don't know why. I mean, I'm not making this up to, you know, make the Christmas sound special, but I really felt that there was something special about this Christmas.
It was. I mean, surely in terms of the amount of effort that had gone in. I mean, I think this is one of the Christmases where so much of effort was seen in terms of the decorations. Yesterday's program by the South African children.
Beautiful.
The sets, so magnificent and wonderful and such a nice concept. I felt transported back to South Africa. The music, the costumes.
So colorful, really.
Really wonderful it was. A beautiful Christmas, and we thank everyone, the whole world, from the bottom of our heart for making it a very beautiful and memorable Christmas for all of us here.
Special mention to the New Zealanders who created the Old Ashram.
Yes.
As you said, the South African team which, you know, presented the beautiful drama. And also, we came to know last evening that they were responsible for the lighting of the whole ashram. The serial lighting.
And not only this year, for the last 3 years they have been doing the seva where they come and train up and help the organizing countries in putting up lights all around Prashanthi.
And also the Australian youth who are here and who also had the opportunity to join the New Zealanders and help them in the decoration. We had a small discussion with the youth from the Australian group.
It is also special for me, Prem, because you may not be aware, but yesterday, you know, we have a group of volunteers who work in our archives. In the archives, they're volunteering and helping us. All of them are Christians, almost 9 or 10 of them. Yesterday, we were pleasantly surprised in the studio when they all came singing carols and distributing chocolates, and there was a Santa. They really brought in a lot of merriment and joy and love when we were all so, you know, pouring into our works and we were so tensed and so many things had to be done. Those 15 minutes provided a beautiful breather. It was so wonderful.
Very true, listeners. And they haven't spared our studio also. It's so well decorated now. I was telling the person who is deeply involved in this whole arrangement, I said the studio has never been so beautiful before. And even our
Sai Blossom store.
Sai Blossom store also has been decorated well. So all in all, it's a beautiful Christmas. We've had a lovely time, and we cannot leave behind what Swami always emphasizes on celebrating festivals. That is to give importance to the message, the person central to this whole celebration has brought, Jesus Christ, the message which is given us has stood the test of time. And it would definitely be in the context to look at these teachings in our understanding of Swami's message.
Yeah, the next Beatitude, Prem, is blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. You know, thinking about righteousness and about this Beatitude, I'm reminded of another, dictum from Indian spirituality, which says dharmo rakshati rakshitaha.
True. Those who protect dharma or righteousness will be protected by the very act of protecting
dharma. And a corollary also is that dharmo eva hato hanti, which means those who destroy dharma will themselves be destroyed merely by the act of destroying dharma.
But how practical is this? I mean, one would really ask, you know, do we really see this happening in life? I mean, what do you feel?
You know, this is a question that often plagued my mind also. You know, like Swami says, follow dharma, be good. So I used to wonder, what is the, if suppose I become dharmic, I become righteous, I start doing good, how is the world going to change? Because whether I'm good or bad, the world is what it is. You know, and often I feel that, you know, the world is cruel, the world is wrong, the world does this, the world is going down into the dumps. Then what is the use of me doing good? What is the use of me being dharmic? It was at that time that I came across a passage from Bhagwan's Dharma Vahini.
Okay.
In that, so beautifully Swami puts it. He says, your dharma or your goodness is like a lamp that you carry along with you.
Mm-hmm.
And the world is one large dark room that's cluttered with so much furniture, so many things lying in the way, obstacles, everything. If you walk into the room with your lamp of dharma, it may not unclutter the room, clean it up and make it bright, but it will ensure that you do not bump into any of the obstacles. And so Swami says that if you follow dharma, if you are good, your goodness and your dharma will in themselves protect you. You need not worry about whether everyone else is being good, whether anyone else is being dharmic. We need not worry about that at all. It's all about oneself. Dharma is about oneself, because you follow dharma, dharma protects you. That's how we had used this example during the last afternoon satsang. The same age was the best of times for Prahallada, the son of Hiranyakashipu the demon, while it was the worst of times for his father Hiranyakashipu the demon. One got annihilated by the Lord, the other got uplifted by the Lord. Because it is not about a bad time or a good time. It's about what they embodied. If you hold dharma, dharma will uphold you.
And something which you've done before, and we actually even discussed it yesterday, was that, you know, any situation or any lesson, if you can look at it in the three ways of the three different paths which Swami talks, bhakti, karma and jnana.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you look at this righteousness, and why the emphasis on you being righteous is so important. You know, if you look at it, the ultimate sense, jnana, you know, what Advaita talks of is that there is only one person and his illusion. And his illusion is the universe.
Correct.
So all that has to be changed only in the individual.
Right. Along the jnana marga.
Along the jnana marga. And if you talk about karma, the very basis of karma marga is that you have right only over your action, and not how people react to your action, or not how people respond to your action. And what you do, you make it, you know, as pure as possible, as you know, as righteous, as correct, aligned as to righteousness
perfect.
As possible. So even karma marga speaks of that, and bhakti, of course, is that, you know, oh, you do it only for the love of God, and it is not because someone else is looking at you, or this is the situation and I have to do so. It's just that a spontaneous outpouring of, in response to Swami, love for God, right?
So it all boils down to whether you are on the karma, bhakti or jnana marga. That is, if you are an aspirant for spirituality, only what you do, what you think and what you speak is all that should matter in terms of correcting it and making it good. It doesn't matter what others say, think or speak or do, because that is beyond our scope.
And I think that is something which we often get into, you know, because I think this came up sometime earlier also, that we often find reasons for our, you know, shortcoming.
He's not doing it, so why should I?
Yeah, you know.
What's the use?
This is a situation in which I reacted like this. You know, we tend to say that. But from what we see here, especially the second line of this beatitude, I think it's, you know, for they will be filled. You know, if you look at this, it's like who hungers and thirsts and they will be filled. So it looks like it's rhyming. But the fact is, they will be filled has a very important meaning in that, because I feel it talks about contentment.
Correct. It's only when you are contented do you feel full. You know, otherwise you are always craving and hungry. That is what we discussed last week also, when where Swami says, the poorest man in the world is he who has many desires, and the richest man and happiest man in the world is he who has contentment. Exactly. Because contentment immediately makes you feel full.
Self-satisfaction is the most important thing. You know, I remember once, you know, it seems in the when Swami was in Kodaikanal, boys had put up a program in front of Swami, and it didn't come out as well as they wanted it to be. There were a few things, and it didn't come out really well. And they all knew that it was bad. Okay, but one of the singers went up to Swami and said, "Swami, how's the program?" Mm. And even as he was asking that, he knew that it was not good. And Swami didn't say it was bad. Swami didn't say it was good. Swami just said, "Ask yourself, if you are satisfied, Swami is satisfied."
Mm.
You know, that importance of doing anything for our own satisfaction. If we feel that it is right, you know, it's again a discussion where people can say that, yeah, I feel right doing the wrong thing. You know, I mean, I feel right being greedy.
Yeah. So what if I say that I feel fine if I just loot a bank and get enough money for myself?
Yeah, but I think, you know, as we all have seen in our own life, guilt is something which somewhere lingers around in the mind. You know, so many things, even small wrong things which you've done, you know, it always lingers around in the mind. And then, you know, something else I remember is one of my juniors, you know, he was telling me the first time he became Swami's student, the first day he was in a Trayi session. And okay, and he was seated there, and Swami didn't even come down. Swami came on the balcony in the round hall. Swami just came there, and from there Swami gave him a stare. He felt like Swami was staring at him. He just felt that Swami is staring at me. And the first thought which came to his mind was, oh, I have been a non-vegetarian all my life.
Okay.
You know, maybe Swami is staring at me and Swami is upset with me because of that. You see, nothing. Swami didn't say anything. It's not that he was told that being a non-vegetarian is wrong, anything like that. But just that one stare, it kind of brought out from within what was the deepest guilt in him.
You know, I can totally empathize with that. Innumerable are the occasions, you know, where I am convinced and I feel that I have done something good. I have done something nice. That day, you know, when I'm sitting in darshan and Swami is sitting on the chair, and if Swami happens to look at me, a wide smile blossoms on my face, and I look back, I sit in all, you know, all glory, if I can say so, sit straight and look at Swami. At the same time, you know, if I have done something wrong, or if I'm feeling guilty about something, if I'm feeling bad about something that I have done, the same Swami, the same look, you know, I feel like hiding my face somewhere. I don't want to look at him in the eye. It's amazing how it happens. And Swami says that is actually your own conscience. That is Swami seated in the heart. Unless Swami seated in the heart is happy with us, the Swami seated outside is never going to be happy with us.
So the importance of that dharmo rakshati rakshita, because, you know, in, if we superficially look at some of the scriptures, even the Mahabharata, you know, oftentimes it even occurs to me, the Pandava brothers, Yudhishthira and the younger brothers and Draupadi, they were supposed to be the ones who were righteous,
upholding dharma.
Upholding dharma. But if you look at their life, I think they suffered much more than the party which was actually opposing dharma.
But as you rightly pointed out, Prem, this is only at the superficial level. If you see at an inner level, the Pandavas might have lived in the forest. They might have had hardships in terms of getting their food, getting their shelter and all that. But all the while, the Kauravas, Duryodhana's example is there, you know. Duryodhana is not at peace even in the luxurious palace. He's got a golden bed with a nice cushiony mattress on it. He doesn't get sleep at night because he's always wondering, how is it that the Pandavas are so happy and fine? How is it that they are happy? He might have had everything which the world considers as the best, as a reward. They think that Duryodhana is being rewarded for his badness. But he's suffering from a kind of madness which is not giving him peace at all. He's not at all at peace. He's torn apart from inside, day in and day out. If I am given a choice of leading a life of a Pandava or Duryodhana, I feel any day I would choose a Pandava, because though there are physical hardships, there's great contentment, love in the heart and peace coming from the fact, from the truth that the Lord Krishna is on my side, rather than be like Duryodhana, who seems to have everything. In fact, I feel if Duryodhana had complained to somebody that, hey, what a terrible life I am having, nobody would have even understood. because they would have felt, you have got everything. What do you mean by saying you are having a terrible life? Such was the pathetic condition of Duryodhana. But if the same Pandava, everybody sympathized with the Pandavas, but if you ask the Pandava, maybe they, Pandava brothers, maybe they'll say, hey, you know, take it easy. We are fine. We are happy. We have the Lord with us. It's all about the internal comfort, the internal satisfaction and the internal peace, internal luxury rather than the external.
I mean, we've spoken about dharma, but you know, it's so difficult to define this word dharma. I mean, what is a person's dharma? And I mean, of course, Swami has written so much about it, spoken so much about it, but what can we say about...
If we refer to the Dharma Vahini, Swami beautifully puts it. He says there is only one dharma, and that is the Swadharma or Atma Dharma.
Okay.
And he says Atma Dharma is recognizing the ultimate truth, that it is the same spark of divinity that pervades every atom of this creation. Every person you see around is God. That is the ultimate rule, or the Atma Dharma as it is called.
Okay.
And Swami says, now this guiding principle or rule is then decoded and made into many paradharmas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there is a dharma or a duty of a mother, a duty of a teacher, a duty of a boy, a duty of a grandfather, duty of a king, based on profession, based on the time, based on the situation, deshakala paristhiti. What one has to do as according to one's duty varies. And this is paradharma. And Swami says paradharma has always has to be in accordance to and subservient to the Atma Dharma, which is recognizing the fact that there is God in everyone.
But how does it, you know, exhibit itself practically? I mean, paradharma is quite easy to understand, as you said, deshakala paristhiti, the station of life you are placed in. You know,
correct. Being so if I'm a teacher, to teach is my duty.
True. But how do we, I mean, does Atma Dharma show itself, you know, in a physical manifestation as we can see it?
Well, what I feel is that Swami has answered this by saying that the Lord sits within as your conscience. If you silence your mind and sit calm, you will hear the voice of conscience. And you know, the conscience somehow, from my experience, I feel that it has got a variable volume when it speaks. The more number of times you follow your conscience and obey it, the louder it gets. Each day you follow it, do everything according to your conscience, its voice you will see it getting louder and louder with each passing day. The more and more you flout the conscience, try to cover it up and mask it away, its voice gets weaker and weaker. It's almost like we are throwing dirt on the conscience. So I feel all our sadhana and our practices, spiritual practices, are meant to give us the courage, the confidence and the strength to follow what our conscience is saying. And Swami promises, emphatically assures, that anybody who needs me deserves me, anybody who seeks me will get an answer. So Swami definitely answers, the conscience answers. It answers, gives the replies by decoding from the Atma Dharma, the ultimate reality, which is God is in everyone. Based on that only, it gives us the replies. It's only a question of we having the courage and strength and faith to do what answer we get.
And amazing, actually, it's a very beautiful point. And actually, we can see it, you know, in vogue, if I could say so, in, you know, in what we see of Swami. Because ultimately, if you look at it in a spiritual sense, Swami is a divine master, and everybody who comes to him is not a devotee, is a disciple.
Correct.
Who has come to learn and, you know, take to the path of spirituality as commanded by him. So some come to him as a lecturer, some come to him as a student.
Correct.
Some come to him as a doctor. You know, some come to him in various capacities. And in doing their dharma properly, I think they get even more they get pulled to him, and they also get more prepared to receive the spiritual instruction he gives. And that is why even, you know, Swami always emphasizes, even for, you know, a housewife, the duties of a housewife itself will make that person prepared to receive a spiritual message from Swami. So as you said, dharma, following dharma, which is paradharma as we understand it, or dharma which relates to the body, actually prepares you to be more tuned to receive what is the Atma Dharma.
Beautifully put, Prem, because I remember it was the Sai Sannidhi day.
Okay.
I mean, a day when all of us who were working in Swami's institutions, gathered at his lotus feet. I think this was 1 year before you joined us.
Mm-hmm.
So Swami had called all of us into the bhajan hall. And there, you know, it was in the month of September. So all of us as a group, we asked Swami, Swami, we want to do something special for your birthday, you know. As your boys working in your institutions, we would like to do something special for your birthday. What should we do? Swami's reply was immediate, simple and straight. He just said, do your jobs and duties properly. That is enough. You need not do anything else. Doing your duty properly. If you are a driver, you can try to be the best driver in the world. If you are a sweeper, try to be the best sweeper in the world. Do your duty to perfection. You know, it is said, yoga karmasu kaushalam. And Swami was directly referring to that. Swami said, you just do your duties properly and that is enough. And that is why I feel, you know, doing the duty which is dharma, righteousness. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, because they will be filled, in the meaning that they will have a contented and peaceful life.
And that's richness finally. You know, that is, as we discussed before, the richest one is the one who has maximum contentment.
Mm.
And it's a very clear statement here that those who hunger for righteousness, it is not hungering for wealth or power or anything. Those who hunger for righteousness, to be perfect in whatever they're doing, perfect in the effort itself, will give you the maximum contentment, not reaching where...
Hungering for perfection. And perfection is nothing but God, because God is perfection.
Beautiful. So, Arvind, we'll just take a quick break here. And when we come back, we will move to the next beatitude.
Highest virtue that alone brings happiness, and true happiness comes to him alone who is righteous for the sake of righteousness.
That was pretty short and fast.
But I think it just was kind of reflecting what we had discussed.
Yeah, I just said that dharma, righteousness is the ultimate thing. It is the greatest. And so that sums it up, I think.
Okay, Arvind, the next one in the list, that is the fifth beatitude, is that blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Mercy, you know, it's a, I think, literally, in sense of literature, very, very well spoken about word.
Correct.
I think we all would have read about the huge discourse in Shakespearean literature, the virtue of mercy.
Correct.
Merchant of Venice.
Ah, yes. Okay.
Yeah, but what do we understand of mercy?
Well, when the term word mercy comes up, the first thing I feel is mercy is something in which you do an act of kindness out of empathy and not out of sympathy. You know, often mercy is like, you know, it is a weaker person seeking mercy from a stronger person. But somehow I feel that is a misconception, or it is projected wrongly. Mercy is something that a good act or kindness that is shown to another person because you empathize with that person, not because you sympathize. Sympathy happens when there's almost like a kind of helplessness, you're not able to do anything. Mm. Empathy is you feel the other's pain as your own pain. And that is why you show mercy. So I feel blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. It also reads as blessed are those who empathize, for they too will receive empathy.
There are two things I see from this sentence. One is, of course, as you said, the value of mercy, and mercy stands for empathy.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is that, I mean, it's a general statement where it says, no, blessed are the merciful, for they shall be shown mercy.
Mm-hmm.
For those who show goodness, goodness will be given in return. Mm. Right? And it's quite similar to another statement which Jesus makes. That do unto others what you would like to do.
What you would like others to do unto you.
So, I mean, it's kind of an extension of this statement.
when you say this, Prem, I'm reminded of a small episode that happened.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was a direct example of what we just now said, you know, do unto others what you expect others to do unto you. So what happened was, it was in my third year undergraduation. I was in Vrindavan, Whitefield.
Okay.
And I had to play a shuttle badminton final match, singles, with an opponent. You know, his name was Dikshit. And so I had to face Dikshit in the final. 2 days before the final, what happened was, while playing cricket, he fell down and he got a cut on his upper lip,
okay,
which needed 5-6 stitches.
Oh.
And when that happened, he would definitely not be in a proper condition to play because the pain is there. He cannot play a final match of a tournament. But I was told, you know, by the organizing teachers that this match has to happen on the scheduled Sunday.
Okay.
If it does not happen, it's a walkover. And whoever is unable to play loses, the other person wins. Which means, you know, without even playing the final, I would be declared winner. Somehow my heart did not agree to this.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to these organizing teachers and I said, sir, please don't make this announcement.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you make this announcement publicly, I too will publicly announce that I don't want to take such a victory. Because it is so unfair. Even if it delays the tournament, I don't mind. Either we share it,
okay,
or we wait and we play the match after a week or so like that. So they were kind enough, they agreed to this. And the match was actually held 1 week later, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It was nice and I felt very nice about this whole thing.
You're not telling us what happened in the match.
Well, yeah, you know, it was a closely contested match. I won the match. It was nice, but sweeter than the victory was the fact that, you know, I felt that I had done something good and I felt very good about it.
Okay.
The doing good in itself was like a reward, you know.
True.
Nothing else was needed. Even if I had lost the match, I think that feel good would not have gone. And then what happened was, the doubles tournament was held, you know. And somehow it happened that, in the doubles finals too, myself and my partner had to meet the same Dikshit and his partner.
Okay.
In the doubles final also. Now this time, a very strange thing happened. Just hours before the match, I tripped down the staircase and I badly bruised my left foot, you know. It got twisted and strained. And it had to be put in a kind of a temporary cast. And I was with a crutch. At this time, you know, the organizers were about to announce the same rule. I had not told anything to this boy, Dikshit, you know.
Mm-hmm.
In the same way, it was almost like Newton's, you know, law that every action has an equal and opposite reaction. In the same way, without me asking or without anybody telling, this boy went to the organizers and he told them, the same thing what I had told him, you know, he said, I do not want to accept a victory like this. You either we both win it or you postpone the postpone the doubles finals. And so I got the reward that way, that the match was postponed and when I was fit and fine only that we played the match. So it's not that every time in life, you know, you can see this happening. But this one episode was enough to prove to me that no matter what you do good, It will not go unescaped, unnoticed. Whatever, in the same way, whatever bad you do, however secretly you do, that too will not go unnoticed. Everything will definitely come back to us in some way or the other, at some time or the other. And that is why it is blessed, it is good that we keep doing good. And, you know, that is what we derived, that blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Blessed are the good, for they will receive good. Blessed are those who are kind, for they will receive kindness.
Yeah, and even as you were telling about doing good and bad in secrecy, I was just reminded of a quote which says, you know, what you really are is defined by what you do when you know that nobody will discover it out.
Correct.
You know, literally, and talking about mercy, Arvind, I'm reminded of the word Swami uses, you know. Swami says, kshama. And kshama is
a
not
a very all-encompassing
honestly
word.
Yeah. You know, we generally loosely translate mercy into Sanskrit as daya, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a mix of compassion and mercy. But kshama is actually a very, very all-encompassing word, as you said.
Yeah, in the discourses, you know, kshama is often translated as patience. But
yeah,
it's much more than that.
Sometimes patience, sometimes forbearance,
mm-hmm,
sometimes forgiveness.
Correct.
But, you know, I remember
all three and much more.
Much more than that. Because in my second UG, you know, Swami gave at least three discourses.
On Kshama?
On this topic of Kshama.
Wow.
And, I mean...
He must have mentioned Draupadi then, because...
Yeah, definitely. I mean, before that, you know, that Padyam which Swami says, this is Swami has told in many other discourses, but, you know, what all Kshama can give and what all Kshama has in it.
Okay. You know,
just maybe we'll just quickly play that Padyam.
Kshama satyamu Kshama dharmamu Kshama satyamu Kshama dharmamu Kshama yogamu Kshama ahimsa Kshama dharmamu Kshama santoshamu samadhammamu Kshama sarvasvambu sarvalokamulandum Kshama sarvasvambu sarvalokamulandum.
You know, we can quite understand, you know, Swami's importance, the importance Swami gives to the virtue of Kshama. And, you know, if I can, if my memory serves me right, the kind of things which Swami told about Kshama and forbearance, in that one of the discourses, Swami spoke of Kshama as forbearance. The ability to, you know, bear any kind of injustice, any kind of pain, any kind of inequality, and what that can confer on you.
You know, when you describe Kshama like that, it brings, you know, Jesus had said that if someone slaps you on one cheek, you show
offer
the
your
offer your other cheek.
Do not.
At first glance, or when you first hear it, it sounds like a defeatist and a kind of, you know, a loser kind of attitude. But it embodies the highest truth. If, say, my right hand were to poke or pinch my left hand will not pinch back the right hand, because two pinches will be more painful than one pinch for me. I mean, it's better that one pinch, I bear one pinch rather than bear two pinches. Because for me, there's no difference between my right hand and left hand. For people, you know, for Jesus and the masters, they are one with the truth. The truth that it's the same. Everything is part of one cosmic being. And that's why they have so much of patience, forbearance, forgiveness and love. And that is why when somebody hits you, do not hit back. Because two pains is more painful than one pain. And for a person who is immersed in this reality, in this truth, it is always going to be the same whether you hit me or I hit you.
As Gandhi says, an eye for an eye.
And tooth for a tooth makes the whole blind, a whole world blind and toothless.
And another thing, you know, when you talk of forbearance, as we already mentioned it, the example of Draupadi. It's a very interesting thing, you know, there was one discourse clip in which Swami says, why Draupadi is kind of extolled as a person who stands out as an example for womanhood itself. And in fact, in a discourse, Swami is comparing Draupadi with Sita, Draupadi with some other characters in ancient mythology, the Savitri. There's so many names which Swami says. Swami says among all these, Draupadi stands out. And in that discourse, you know, Swami was explaining very beautifully about that incident which actually gave her that name, why she is an example for womanhood. And as we all know, that in the end of the Mahabharata war,
correct,
Ashwatthama, who is in the losing side, all the Kauravas are killed.
Actually, by then the war is almost over.
War is over, because all the Kauravas have been vanquished. And, you know, not able
even
to...
Even Duryodhana is vanquished.
Yeah, even Duryodhana, the eldest among the brothers, is vanquished. And, you know, not able to accept this defeat. What Ashwatthama does is
in a very revengeful attitude.
Yeah, he goes and kills all the children of the Pandavas, the Upapandavas, as they called, when they're asleep. And when the Pandava brothers come to know that Ashwatthama has done this, Bhima and Arjuna go and
they're furious.
You know, capture him, and they bring him to the presence of Draupadi. And, you know, it's the same Draupadi who was, when she was dishonored in the court, took vows such as, I will not tie my hair till it is you know, soaked,
till
anointed,
it is, yeah, anointed
with the blood of Dushasana, and until the lap of Duryodhana is not
broken.
Torn open, broken. You know, the same lady who took such vows, you know, she's been met with an even more...
she's lost all her five sons.
Even more fierce injustice. She's been, you know, meted out, and the perpetrator of that is brought in front of her. And she says that the pain that I am undergoing, I don't want another mother to undergo. And she says, I am crying because I've lost my children. If you kill Ashwatthama now, his mother too will undergo the same pain I'm undergoing.
Exactly, this empathy is seen
empathy,
there so much.
Yeah, very true. And, you know, I think, and that is the growth she had undertaken actually. Just
before, undergone, yeah.
Undergone, you know, before and after the Mahabharata war.
No wonder that Swami uses this example of Draupadi as Kshama, because even as you were telling the story, Prem, I was, you know, so lost in that. Here, for a small, not small, okay, it's no, not small, it is definitely a dishonor. She took such a terrible vow, you know. And on the other case, you know, a mother losing one child, how painful it is. They say that a man will never be able to understand that, so it's beyond our scope of understanding, but this much we know theoretically, that it's very painful. And here, all her children, and that too not in war, not by righteous means. You know, in every sense of the term and the word, Ashwatthama was dead wrong. And any punishment to him would be justified.
True.
But I think Draupadi punished him with her forgiveness more than anything else. The remorse, the guilt that Ashwatthama carried killed him every moment of his life after that. And we know, you know, that Ashwatthama has been blessed to be a Chiranjeevi, a one who is immortal. For lifetimes together, he has been cursed with a heavy conscience that never allows him a single moment of peace of mind. In that way, you know, I feel forgiveness is also a most powerful punishment.
And talking about mercy, there can't be a better example than Jesus, as we spoke last week also, when he was on the cross.
He said, Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they're doing.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is what defines a real hero. You know, somebody was explaining about the nature of a snake. And you know, scientifically, they were saying that invariably, when a snake strikes a person, it's only in defense. It's never an offense.
Correct.
Because a snake, by nature, is a very, very scared animal. And that is why they used to say, you know, if you want to, you're walking into a dark place and you're scared that there might be snakes, you just walk with heavy footsteps.
Yeah, or tap a stick in front of you.
Yeah, and snake will never, because it's so scared. And it's only when, you know, it is suddenly confronted by a stranger and it's really wants to defend itself, it strikes. Okay, and if you look at it, it also shows that the person who strikes actually shows his fear more than his courage.
Correct.
You know, one who reacts to a situation by striking, he's actually exhibiting his fear more than his courage. And I think that on the basis of that is what even the Satyagraha movement, what we talk of, was started by Mahatma Gandhi. He always told his followers that the kind of courage you exhibit in non-violence is far beyond what you can show in violence.
Wow. Wow, Prem, that's a fantastic light that you have put mercy and Kshama in. It's so wonderful. I'm feeling so inspired here because we didn't have this as part of our pre-satsang talk. So beautiful that is, that when we attack, we are actually showing our cowardice and our fear more than our confidence and strength. Strength lies in forbearance and Kshama. Courage lies in forbearance and Kshama. Have I got it right?
I don't know. I really hope that we might have got it right in words. I think the test is
when it comes to life.
And there was another beautiful thing, you know, as you were saying this, it just came to me. It's actually a dialogue from a movie, but it's so beautiful. You know, it actually explains the working of divinity. In that he says that when you pray for mercy or when you pray for, you know, succor, it is not that you will be given mercy just like that. You will be given situations where mercy can come to you, which means you will be put in difficulties.
Correct.
And when you ask for strength, it's not the strength that will be given to you. You'll be given situations where you can exhibit strength.
It's like physically, if you take it, I want to develop muscles so that, you know, I can do a lot of whatever, running around without tiring and feeling weak. But if I have to develop the muscles, what am I told? I'm told to do 100 push-ups, which will actually fatigue them and tire them out like never before. But it is in that process that the muscles get built, so that next day when I have to do something else, not next day, but so if I have to do anything else next time, they are able to take on much grander load. It's only by working that we become better.
In fact, there are so many examples like this. If you hammer a nail into the wall, the nail is hammered so that it's stuck inside. But you, after hammering, you pull it out.
To check.
So the very act for which you are actually nailing the hammer, you're hammering the nail inside, you're doing the opposite of that. And that is what actually shows you whether you've done the job right.
Correct.
So I think every time a difficulty comes to us in life, every time some situation comes which tests our patience, we should realize that, you know, it's part of the process of giving us more patience. So that kind of brings us to the end of mercy and what the Beatitudes have to say about them.
Yeah, maybe, you know, Prem, I think we should play that interesting bhajan, that Sanskrit bhajan which has been made into English, the Stream of Mercy.
Yeah, I think recorded by some devotees of Swami. It's a very popular bhajan.
Hey Ram Bhagavan,
yeah,
the tune.
But the wordings are in English.
It's all about mercy.
Saram Bhagavan, O compassionate loving God, O stream of mercy divine. Saram Bhagavan, O compassionate loving God, O stream of mercy divine. Saram Bhagavan, Saram Bhagavan, O compassionate loving God, is found in a pure, pure heart. But when selfishness enters, mercy departs. A merciful soul will never cause pain, harmless with loss and gain. Mercy is the essence of the golden rule, shines in God's crown like His golden jewel. Shines in God's crown like His golden jewel.
Yes, Arun, that so that kind of gets us to an end of the beatitude about mercy. That is, blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy.
The next one is, blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. What do you think about this, Prem?
Yeah, purity, I mean, defining purity. That is where the crux lies. I mean, how do we define purity?
Yeah, we know the traits of purity, we know the characteristics of purity. But I feel...
Actually, knowing the traits of purity, I think that also is a very, very subjective thing. Mm. What I think is purity.
Mm.
Like, let's say, if you know, I want to be a person who is in total control of my life. Somebody who is able to do that best, I feel he's the most perfect person.
Yeah, but Prem, you know, I feel the best thing, the best way to define purity would be through this story of this goldsmith. You know, often comparisons are made where Swami or God is the goldsmith and we are gold, you know, his bangaru.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever trials and tribulations we face in life, we say it as the process of the gold going through the purification process in the fire. And there's an interesting story which says, how does the goldsmith judge whether the gold has become fully pure?
Okay.
And it says that he beats it, he puts it in the fire, he makes it undergo all kinds of things. He will know when the gold is pure when he is able to see his own reflection in the piece of gold. And so I feel, in the ultimate sense, purity is realizing our oneness with God and being able to reflect Swami. I feel we are 100% pure if anybody who sees us, speaks to us, interacts with us, gets the same joy that they get when they speak, see or interact with Swami.
My God, that makes me feel a little uncomfortable because it's so far away. Not because, you know, it's not possible or it's so, unimaginable. But it's just so far away. I mean, if you look at us, and all said and done, I think most of us believe that we have embarked on a journey of purity. We are trying, in a process of purification.
Getting purer and purer each passing day.
Yeah, and I think that is the very essence or the very, very motive behind doing any kind of spiritual effort, sadhana, right? And
we had even spoken about this just some time back, you remember, means that when you want to hear the voice of conscience, the different layers of dirt, I feel another way of defining purity would be to remove those layers of dirt to such an extent that for every action that is to be done, the voice of the conscience, the voice of Lord within rings out loud and clear. So then any action you do, any word you speak or any thought that you think also, you will be able to do it with such courage, confidence, because it is Swami telling me.
And exactly, in fact, you know, I remember there was a group which came and Swami blessed them with an audience.
Hmm.
And at the end of the discourse, this was inside the Bhajan Hall, just the group with Swami. And Swami said, if you have any doubts, if you have any questions, you can ask. And this is the question which was asked, actually. One person said, Swami, we do sadhana, we do bhajans, we do all these things. But how do we know that this is actually purifying us?
Hmm.
How do we know that the process of purification is actually happening? And without a moment's pause, Swami gave, you will start hearing my voice from within.
Wow.
A couple of things. This is, of course, a revealing thing that, you know, when you start getting purified, you listen to Swami's voice from within.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is, when you start getting purified, you listen to the voice from within. It's not that when you are absolutely pure, you start listening.
Okay, so it's actually a very encouraging thing. Even if I embark on this journey of getting pure, I will start hearing.
True, and I feel that complete journey of purification itself needs the support of the voice within, or Swami from within.
Hmm.
So it is really encouraging that, you know, Swami doesn't wait for you to completely get pured before he steps in.
Correct. That is definitely encouraging. You know,
yeah, and I'll tell you something else which I feel, you know, especially this thing which Swami says, that you will hear the voice from within.
Hmm.
I don't know, I think people who have lived with Swami physically, or, you know, those who have been having an inner connect with Swami, will agree that to be absolutely obedient to Swami is actually not very easy.
Very right. Many times you will have to, because it's a question of defining your priorities, you know. If you tell Swami is your top priority, then sometimes you may, your top priority may get pitted against your second most priority, and that is what defines. So it is definitely not easy to follow everything that Swami says.
That's one thing. And the other thing is, like, you know, let me just give this analogy. Let's say you're driving a car.
Okay.
Okay. and I'm sitting beside you, and I'm supposed to be telling you where to go. So if I tell you take a right, you can take a right. If I tell you take a left, or if I say speed up or slow down, you can do that.
I tell you drive into a wall.
Not exactly. I wouldn't do that. But you know, let's say that I tell you that. You know, when can you absolutely follow what I'm telling you?
If I have absolute faith in you, if I have absolute trust in you.
That is one thing. And the second thing is, if you have absolute control over the car.
Oh, yes.
You have to be a good driver.
I assumed that in the beginning.
Yeah, you have to be a good driver. Exactly. So if Swami is coming and giving me commands, okay, asking me to do things, I can do that only when I am absolute control over my body and mind.
Wow.
You know, see, if Swami comes and tells me you sit here, or you stand up, or you go out, it'll be easy for me to do, because more or less we all have a fair control over our body. But if Swami comes and tells you, whatever happens, always be happy. I think that'll be really very difficult to follow. In fact, it actually happened, you know, when a politician devotee of Swami who came to Swami, and Swami had called him for an interview, and Swami had literally filled his and his wife's heart with so much bliss. So in that moment, he just said, Swami, what do you want me to do? Whatever you say, I will do. Whatever you say, I'll do. And Swami kept on, you know, putting that question away. And he kept repeating it, Swami, whatever you say, I'll do. In the end of the interview, Swami said, I'll tell you only one thing, always be happy. And it didn't take much time for him to realize that that was the most difficult, you know, command of Swami to obey.
Correct.
So what I'm trying to say is, unless we have absolute control over our thoughts, over our mind, over our impulses, I think we can never reach that state of absolute obedience.
So the way I think to go is through regular and intense practice. We have to practice. Practice makes a man perfect. And that is what even Lord Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita advised Arjuna, you know. He said, Abhyasena tu Kaunteya. It is through practice alone that you will be able to achieve this perfection. So as you said, to get control over the body and the mind, in order that we become pure, so that we can follow every word that Swami says, we have to start putting in efforts.
And I think it's a two-pronged effort, you know. At one side, you start doing things which you feel will purify you from within. And then Swami also gives you, you know, instructions according to your situation, according to your needs. And at the same time, this practice also goes on, and it's all these things keep happening together, the purification and trying to reach that state of total control of body, mind, and impulses and all that. So it is not like you wait till that happens to do this.
Correct. It is like if you want to learn swimming, you have to dive into the pool.
Yeah, I mean, you can't say that I will jump in after I learn swimming. And you mentioned about practice. And I have a small clip of Swami's discourse here, in which Swami says the importance of practice. And at the end of it, I would like to talk a little more about, you know, purity and what I feel is purity, why purity is different from, you know, goodness, as we understand. But first we'll listen to Swami's discourse clip on practice.
Sreyo hi jnanam abhyasat. నీవు ప్రతి విషయాన్ని కూడా అభ్యాసం చేసుకోవాలి.
యూ షుడ్ ప్రాక్టీస్ ఎవ్రీథింగ్, మేక్ ఇట్ హ్యాపీ.
ప్రతి ఒక్కటి ప్రాక్టీస్ చేయి.
యూ షుడ్
వాకింగ్ ప్రాక్టీస్ చేయి, టాకింగ్ ప్రాక్టీస్ చేయి, రీడింగ్ ప్రాక్టీస్ చేయి, రైటింగ్ ప్రాక్టీస్ చేయి, ఈటింగ్ ప్రాక్టీస్ చేయి, అన్ని ప్రాక్టీస్ చేయి.
వాకింగ్ టాకింగ్ రైటింగ్ రీడింగ్ ఈటింగ్ ఈజ్ ఎవ్రీథింగ్ ఈజ్ ఏ ప్రాక్టీస్.
కనుకనే ఈ యొక్క ప్రాక్టీస్ అనేటువంటి మనం అన్ని నిత్య జీవితంలో జరగవలసినటువంటివి.
దిస్ ప్రాక్టీస్ ఇస్ టు బి డన్ ఇన్ ది డే టు డే లైఫ్.
ఆ ప్రాక్టీస్ లు సక్రమమైనటువంటివి, సత్యమైనటువంటి ప్రాక్టీస్ చేయాలి.
బట్ యు షుడ్ ప్రాక్టీస్ విచ్ ఆర్ ట్రూత్ఫుల్. కరెక్ట్.
చెడ్డ ప్రాక్టీస్ చేయకూడదు.
డోంట్ ప్రాక్టీస్ బ్యాడ్ థింగ్స్.
చెడ్డదానికి ప్రాక్టీస్ అవసరం లేదు.
టు డూ బ్యాడ్ యు డోంట్ నీడ్ టు ప్రాక్టీస్.
కొండపైన ఉన్నటువంటి గుండును కాలుతో నెట్టే కిందికి వచ్చి పడిపోతుంది.
ఇఫ్ యు జస్ట్ పుష్ అసైడ్ అన్ ఐరన్ బాల్ ఫ్రమ్ ద మౌంటైన్ టాప్, ఇట్ విల్ ఫాల్ డౌన్.
కింద ఉన్నటువంటి రాయిని పైకి కొండపై పెట్టాలంటే చాలా కష్టమవుతుంది.
బట్ టు లిఫ్ట్ ఏ బౌల్డర్ ఫ్రమ్ ద బాటమ్
దుర్గుణానికి నేను ప్రయత్నం చేయనక్కర్లేదు, నెట్టితే చాలు, కింద పడిపోతుంది.
యూ డోంట్ నీడ్ టు ట్రై టు బి బ్యాడ్.
మీకు అందరికీ బాగా తెలుసును,
యూ నో,
పెద్ద లోడుగా ఉన్నటువంటి లారీ కానీ బస్సులు కానీ మిట్ట ఎక్కాలంటే లారీ, ఇనప లారీ కూడా ఏడుస్తుంది, గీ 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 అని ఏడుస్తుంది పాపం.
The lorry or a bus with full load, as it climbs up the mountain, it makes sound.
Chaala baadha kalugutundi.
To move upward, it suffers.
Down kavalante easy ga ipothundi.
In order to fall,
kabatti easy daniki manam prayatnam cheyakurdu.
Don't make an effort.
Kashtamaina sare, look up.
It may be difficult, look up always.
Low aim is crime.
Low aim is crime.
Kanuka crime kaakurdu manam, look up.
ఆల్వేస్ లుక్ అప్.
ఉన్నత దృష్టిని మనం పెంచుకోవాలి.
ఆల్వేస్ లుక్ అప్.
మర్సీ ఇస్ ఫౌండ్.
I'm sorry for that technical glitch. Coming back to that discourse, Arvind, there are a lot of things Swami was saying, but what we were discussing about was practice. And of course, Swami is giving a beautiful analogy of it's easy to, you know, roll a boulder downhill. You just need to give it a push. But to take it uphill takes more effort. And why I feel practice and purity has a very, very, you know, very, very deep connection is where I would like to define goodness and purity. See, goodness I feel is like, you know, I mean, all of us have a certain amount of goodness.
Correct.
We know it is kind of connected with discrimination. You know, we know what is good, we know what is bad. And even though we want to do sometimes what is bad, our goodness prevails and makes us do what is good. Right?
Yes. It is almost like, against, if I can put it in quotes, against our own wishes, we do good. Because our natural tendency will be to do something that our discrimination tells that it is bad. Don't do it. It's bad. Don't do it. Therefore, we make efforts, refrain from doing the bad, and then do the good.
Yeah, we talk of moral dilemma, right? The very fact that we need to put an effort to do it, I feel it's a lack of purity. Because when we talk of purity, I feel it corresponds to spontaneity.
Spontaneity, huh?
When you do things very, very spontaneously, it becomes second nature. Like, for instance, you know, one of my moral science teachers in school used to say, when somebody comes and asks you, what's your name? The first thing you would do is you will tell your name.
Correct.
You will not try to lie. And she used to say, because truth is your, you know, second nature, it's your nature
it comes
to be truthful.
Spontaneously.
Spontaneously. And this is where purity comes, when, you know, anything which you have done with effort before becomes a part of your nature. And that is why, you know, when I think of the example that Swami gives, again we're coming back to the Mahabharata, where Yudhishthira is sent out to find one bad person.
One bad person in the
one
world.
One bad person in the whole kingdom, and Duryodhana is sent out to find
one good person.
You know, it is not that Yudhishthira found some people who were bad and then said, no, they have these good characteristics.
They're good.
Otherwise, you would have come and told Krishna that, you know, there are no bad people, but there are less good people, maybe. You know, he might have put it that way.
But instead, he said, oh Lord Krishna, there, wherever I go, I saw only good people. If at all there is a bad person, it must be me then.
It must be only me. You know, this comes out of the fact that he was absolutely not able to see the bad in others. And goodness is when you see bad and good, and you decide to focus on the good. But I think
purity is not being able to see the bad at all.
Not able to see the bad at all.
Because bad does not exist when you're pure.
Exactly. And in fact, you know, even as I'm telling this, I'm just reminded of a very beautiful incident which happened. There was one person who was, doing some kind of a malpractice, in the ashram. It was way back, quite some time back. And one day, Swami came, and in front of the whole devotees gathered there, he kind of, literally physically threw him out of the ashram.
Okay.
Swami was very, very upset with him, and Swami said, you've been doing this. Swami was very upset because, you know, as Swami always says, that these are some devotees' offerings of love. And if there is any kind of malpractice involved in this, Swami will not put up with it. And so this person was literally thrown out of the ashram. And one boy who saw this scene, you know, had a very genuine doubt in his mind. He said, you know, the very day when he had this thought to do this wrong thing, Swami would have known it.
Correct.
Why didn't Swami stop him on that day itself? Okay, so he went to a very senior devotee and he asked him this question. You know, I saw this scene, but why did it not be stopped? You know,
why was it not nipped in the bud?
Yeah, in the bud. And this devotee gave a very, very beautiful answer, and I feel it kind of expresses his understanding of Swami. And he said, see, good and bad lies only in our eyes. Swami doesn't see the bad at all. When Swami sees a person, Swami does not see the bad at all. Swami sees only the good. And it is only when, as an administrator, something bad is brought to his notice, Swami reacts as an administrator.
Wow.
But by nature, Swami never sees the bad at all. And I think all of us know that for a fact, because if Swami had chosen to see the bad in us.
In fact, I remember on one occasion, I thought, I thought that Swami is upset with me. And so when Swami was passing by, I somehow got up on my knees and I said, Swami, please forgive me. So Swami just looked at me. I again repeated, Swami, please forgive my mistake.
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea frankly speaking, I had no idea what I was asking, because I just thought Swami is upset, so let me just seek forgiveness for whatever it is. And Swami said, which mistake? You have done so many. Which one? And then I realized that, you know, it's so often it happens that when you interact with Swami on a physical level, you forget whom you are talking with. That is living love, God incarnate there. And He knows every single thought that has gone in me. And that in itself is proof enough for me that He is an embodiment of love and purity. Because in spite of knowing all that about me, He still loves me, He still forgives me. And that is what He asked. He said, which mistake are you referring to? Because the only way He is able to tolerate me or love me is because He doesn't see my mistakes as mistakes at all. He sees only the good in me. And that's why He feels I'm a good person. How many times has Swami told how many people to be good? This is a good person, this is a good boy, this is a good girl, it's a good person. How many? How can he do that unless he's absolutely poor? Yeah, not
somebody
pure.
Observed, you know. Hmm. Swami, if Swami had seen a mistake in us, Swami would have addressed us like others, you know, oh, he's in us. Swami always said, Prema Swarupalara.
Embodiments of divine love, embodiments of love, embodiments of divinity. He saw Himself in us. You know, I don't know, sometimes I feel that is like an inspiring goal that we should reach. That like those pieces of gold reflecting the goldsmith, we too should reflect our goldsmith.
Right, Arvind, even as you say, reflecting God, that is a sign of purity. I'm reminded of a very beautiful incident which you shared with me by one of my seniors.
Hmm.
Okay, and this happened when he had just completed his graduation. And he was waiting for Swami to give him instructions as to what to do. And a few months passed and Swami was not giving him direction, you know, whether to stay and serve here or go and, you know, do something else. And he was becoming a little restless because he by nature wanted to do a lot of things. And he used to feel that, Swami, I have so much of youthful energy in me. Why are you just making me sit quietly without doing anything?
Mm.
Because as we all say, it is easy to see what happens around us, but it's very difficult to see what happens within us.
Correct.
And so he was restless. He said, Swami, I have so much of energy within me. And why did you give me some, you know, work to do and, or, you know, guide me to go and do something so that I can actually use the energy which you've given me? And with this thought, one day he was coming back from the mandir quite late at night, around 11 or so. And he was walking through what we call a Samadhi Road in Puttaparthi, you know, just beside Swami's parent Samadhi. And if you recall, you know, now in that corner where you turn in that road, there is a dustbin.
Correct.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Earlier there was no dustbin there.
Oh.
It was just a dumping place. Hmm. People used to just dump all the, you know, garbage there. So around 11:30 in the night, this boy was just walking by. Okay. And he sees that and he felt a lot of pain in his heart. He said, Swami, in your name, people are doing so much seva all around the world. But here, in your own Puttaparthi, just beside your parents' Samadhi, there is so much of garbage and nobody is cleaning it.
Hmm.
He said, this is really bad. And he thought to himself, tomorrow I should go and tell the ashram authorities to do something about it, you know, just clean this up. Then even as he was walking by, he thought, what if they don't respond? You know, what if I'm not able to find the right person to tell this to? So then he says, okay, I'll just kind of gather a few of my friends and we will do it together.
Hmm.
So he was walking by and again he thought, what if my friends don't come to do? So he said, okay, I'll do it myself. Hmm. So when he decided that he's going to do it himself, he thought what he would want to do there. So he made a mental list of things which had to be done there. He said the garbage has to be cleaned, a dustbin has to be placed there, and maybe we have to paint that whole wall because it has got so dirty, and leave a, you know, message there saying that use the dustbin, don't dirty the place. And then he thought maybe we should make a canal kind of a thing where the water flows away without you know, dirtying the whole place. So he had all these things in his mind, and the next day at around 5:30 he's coming for Nagar Sankirtan.
Hmm.
And he's coming by the same road. And exactly what he had thought in his mind that he had to do was already done.
How in the night?
Yeah. The garbage was clean. Somebody had done it. Apparently, someone had, you know, who had thought of the same thing, had come and done it, but exactly what he had had in his mind.
Wow.
Okay. And when he saw this whole thing, he was really surprised. And then he went and attended the Nagar Sankirtan. And that day when he went and sat for darshan, Swami came and a few people ahead of him, an elderly devotee was sitting. And Swami came, stood and was talking to that devotee.
Hmm.
Okay. And he was just having darshan because the conversation was between somebody else. And at that time, Swami just made the statement. Swami said, my boys think that I just simply make them sit and do nothing.
Wow.
Okay, Swami said this. And the moment Swami said this, he realized that what's coming is for him.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And Swami told a very, very important statement then, you know, at that point. Swami said, when I ask my boys to simply sit, they don't realize that I am working on them. And at the same time, I'm giving them an opportunity to work on themselves.
Wow.
Okay, and this was the first message he got. And the next thing is Swami said was very, very important in the discussion we're having right now. Swami said, my students don't realize what kind of a work I want them to do.
Hmm.
I want them to do work like I do.
Oh.
Okay, and Swami said, how do I do work? Swami said, Vajra Sankalpa. I think of it and it happens. Whatever I decide to do, it just manifests. Mm-hmm. You might be seeing all the efforts and all that, but for me, I think of doing a good and it happens. And Swami said, that is the way I want my boys to work. They should think of doing a good and the good should happen.
And for that to happen, we have to be embodiments of love and purity. Just like Swami is.
Yes.
You know,
and actually, that's exactly what had happened. The boy noticed something happened like that and Swami was calling his attention to what Swami wants.
Very beautiful, because now that you mentioned it, you know, just 2 days back, I was watching a Kung Fu movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in that movie, the master is training the disciple and he tells him, be quiet, be still. So, he comes there and he just remains still and it goes on for days and this person, you know, who's learning gets so irritated. He feels, what is this master doing? So, when he confronts his master and tells, Master, I came to learn Kung Fu and you make me do nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And then the master says, being still and doing nothing are two totally different things. Do not mistake being still for inactivity. Because when you are still, there is so much activity that is going on. And that is what, you know, this statement hit me. It was so beautiful, I felt. Being still and inactivity are two totally different things.
Really, it's like sattva and tamas.
Correct. Exactly. Both are...
Apparently, you know, outwardly look, maybe stillness and inactivity appear to be the same things, but it is so different, you know, in intention and looking within.
And this also brings us to a sub-point, if I may say so. When Swami says that it is in silence, when you are sitting still, bodily still, mentally still, that is when I am working on you. It means that every day, a part of our time, we should give to Swami for working on us. We should spend some time every day in being still in the body and in the mind, so that the Lord is able to work upon us, and so that we are able to become as pure as our Lord. Don't you think so?
Very true, Arvind. And the importance of just doing nothing and letting the Lord do everything. That's important, because all the time we think we are trying to help God, you know. In His effort to purify us, we think we are trying to help Him, but I think much can be achieved if we offer no resistance.
Exactly.
In the name of help.
So that He will be able to do His work normally and not in spite of us.
Okay, Arvind, the time now in our studios is 2:02. Dear listeners, that brings us to the end of another fruitful satsang for us. And I really hope that the same will be the case with each one of you who are joining us today. We'd like to conclude this satsang with a small song which we've heard many times Swami Himself sing. And Swami has often, while singing the song, has said, my message lies in the song. We'd like to play that song for you. Before that, Arvind and myself offer a humble pranam to Bhagavan's lotus feet, and we would like to offer this effort of ours at Swami's Lotus Feet. I'm going to play that song for you. At the other end, we'll have Brother Chandu joining you with his program, Love to Love.
సత్య ధర్మము శాంతి ప్రేమలతో నీ నిత్య జీవన యాత్ర సాగించు. సత్య ధర్మము శాంతి ప్రేమలతో నీ నిత్య జీవన యాత్ర సాగించు. జీవా సత్య ధర్మము శాంతి ప్రేమలతో నీ నిత్య జీవన యాత్ర సాగించు. యత్న ప్రయత్నముల్ మానవ ధర్మము జయాపజయములు దైవాధీనము. సత్య ధర్మము శాంతి ప్రేమలతో నీ నిత్య జీవన యాత్ర సాగించు. తోడ భగవంతుని తలచుచు నిత్య ధర్మములు నిర్వర్తించిన. భక్తి తోడ భగవంతుని తలచుచు నిత్య ధర్మములు నిర్వర్తించిన. అట్టి జనకునకు రాజయోగమున అందరాని మోక్షంబు పొందెను. సత్య ధర్మము శాంతి ప్రేమలతో నీ నిత్య జీవన యాత్ర సాగించు. సత్య ధర్మము శాంతి ప్రేమలతో నీ నిత్య జీవన యాత్ర సాగించు. జీవా సత్య ధర్మము శాంతి ప్రేమలతో నిత్య జీవన యాత్ర సాగించు. హృదయ భూములు సాగు చేయండి మీ మనసు మడకగా గుణములే యత్తుల్.